Willis and Shantae of Positive Light Ministry. Welcome to the Qumran Report. May the peace and blessings of the life-giving creative spirit be upon you and upon your family. My name is Melvin Ishmael Johnson with my co-host who's not here tonight, but we still gonna have a great time up in here. Coming at you live from Skid Row Studios. Our call-in number is 800-893-9562. Listen to us live or download our show in any past show by Googling in skitrow.la and hit Qumran Report. This week on the Qumran Report, we would have a conversation with actor and director Jamal McNeil, recently seen in the movie Fruitvale Station and his outstanding acting in the stage play Cages by Leonard Manzelli. Also, Bobby Buck is in the studio with his monthly section. Jamal, welcome to the Qumran Report.
Thank you, Mel. Thank you. I'm so excited to be here. Anything you want to do, I want to do.
All right.
I mean that.
Can you tell our listening audience a little about your background and how did you get off into acting and directing?
Sure. First of all, happy holidays to everybody. Like I said, I'm excited to be here. I was one of those people who always wanted to be an actor. I knew from 3 years old, my mother and father, I knew it was a purple record. And I said, put it on, and I would dance. It was James Brown. And I remember looking at everybody, how they looked. So I guess I'm a ham. But that's how I knew that. And then by six, I did my first play. And then started taking acting lessons at nine. And then started working professionally off and on by 15. And went to Performing Arts High School, then studied at Howard University, and then the Shakespeare Theater at the Folger, and I'm here. Mm-hmm. Here I am in L.A. God help me.
Okay. Yeah. Now, can you talk about your role in... First of all, before you get into that, can you talk about... You went to Howard University. You was in the theater department there?
Yes, I was.
And can you... Move just a little closer to the mic.
Oh, sure. Yeah, good. Is that better?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Yeah, I can hear it. Actually.
Yeah. Can you talk about what it was like there? How did you get into the theater department there at Howard?
Well, you know what? That's actually funny. I wanted, my father is an engineer, so he's more science and I'm the art, because my mom was an artist and I guess I followed her footsteps. And so my father, it was my dad convinced me to go to Howard.
Mm-hmm.
And he was like, you're going, but you're not going for acting. So we found a happy medium, communication. So the day I had to enroll, I snuck from communications building to the theater arts and signed up. And mm-hmm. then he found out later I was in the theater department mm-hmm. as an actor. But Howard, I loved it. It was so many of the African-American artists you see today. Al Freeman was my professor then. We would have, I mean, anybody from Ozzie Davis, Ruby Dee, Denzel, Debbie Allen, Felicia Allen, mm-hmm. just some of everybody through there. So it was a great wealth of knowledge. And what I always say, because a lot of people ask who are non-black, well, why would you go there? And, you know, why not go to a predominantly white school or whatever? And what I always tell people is, for instance, in my performing arts high school, it was predominantly white. And basically what would happen is you were told, okay, we've gotten enough people of color in this, so you can't really be in that. Or you do a play, and they didn't want a non-traditionally cast. So what happened with a lot of my friends who went to a lot of the other schools, they were playing, unfortunately, maids, butlers, walk-ons. And for me at Howard, I got to do Streetcar Named Desire, the all-black cast. We got to do Shakespeare, and not just Othello or things like that. So you, the point of it is you learn your craft.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't learn my craft if I'm playing a butler.
Mm-hmm.
There's nothing wrong with playing a butler. There's nothing wrong with it or being one, but I couldn't learn. So.
Mm-hmm. We got a caller on the line. Who am I speaking with? Hello?
Hello?
Hello, yeah. Who am I speaking with?
Sedonia.
Oh, yeah. How you doing? You got a question for Jamal.
Yes. I was wondering, like, as a child, did you have any characters you would portray, or were you always just knowing you were an actor?
That's a good question. Yeah, I always kind of played different people, and I love jumping, impersonating people and telling stories. So, yeah, I think that was your question, right? What kind of characters?
Yeah, like, did you have a favorite character you would play, or?
As a kid?
Yeah.
God, I was always playing many different characters. It didn't take much to get me going. I just needed one person to smile, and then it was showtime. So,
acting was like just natural to you? Like,
I think so, yeah, because it was always what I wanted to do. I didn't want to do anything else but that.
Mm-hmm.
I always knew, like, I would sneak at 5 and 6 years old in the middle of the night to watch Lauren Hardy, Abbott and Costello. So I loved all of that. I wanted to learn. Like, from a little boy, I always watched a lot of the old school people, and I wanted to learn, and I loved it, and I understood that this is this style, and that's
mm-hmm.
that style.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
Okay, have you been in any of August Wilson's play? You directed Fences at one time.
I directed Fences out here. I love August Wilson. I lived in Pittsburgh a big part of my life.
Mm-hmm.
So he had a theater group when I was a kid, so I got to be a part of that as a teenager. I did Ma Rainey's Black Bottom, Fences, Seven Guitars. No, I'm forgetting something. But yes,
mm-hmm.
love
mm-hmm.
August Wilson.
Mm-hmm. What do you think about August Wilson as a playwright? You know, the thing that made him such a different playwright.
I think as a playwright, what he did is he went against the grain. But what's so important is, I always tell people as advice, my two cents, is that it's very important to be trained.
Mm-hmm.
So within the realms of whatever format, you know how to go out of it, but you're still within something.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And so he also was, his writing was poetry, like Tennessee Williams
mm-hmm.
and Shakespeare.
Right. Okay, so do you have another comment or question for Jamal?
No, thanks a lot for your answer.
Okay,
thank you very much.
Thank
you for calling.
Let me ask you this. Can you talk about your role in Fruitvale Station, you know, the story of Oscar Grant? I think it was produced by Forrest Whitaker, right?
Yes, yes.
And starring Michael B. Jordan mm-hmm. and Octavia Spencer that was in The Help and all of that.
Yes.
Can you talk about your role in Fruitvale Station? How did that come about?
Sure. I knew Octavia. We knew each other from theater for about, I would say, about 7-8 years now. And actually, I coached her for the help, for the part she got the Oscar for. So we were in contact a lot during that time. And so I'm kind of like, I don't want to ask you for a favor, but I'll take the favor. So when Fruitvale was happening, basically, long and short, she said, here's the name of the casting person. So the rest kind of is up to you. So I went in there and auditioned, and I played the uncle to Oscar and Octavia's brother.
In the movie.
In the movie.
Okay, now also you just finished working with Marlo Wyden, another great playwright.
Yes, fantastic playwright.
And can you tell a little about that project? What was that?
Sure, it was this past Wednesday. It was a benefit fundraiser for HIV/AIDS, more predominantly dealing in the black community and the issues that we face, like a lot of the shame that comes with it, the within the church, how people don't want to talk about it, how a lot of people aren't informed. And so basically what Marlo did is she did a mass call out for people all over the world, actually, to send in monologues or scenes that they wanted to submit dealing with HIV/AIDS. So they sent in their monologues and scenes, and we, I, the director of the stage reading, compiled it together. And we put up a really good show, really, really good show. Mm-hmm. And they raised a pretty decent amount of money, and visual artists donated their works to it and everything. And it was a really good turnout.
Mm-hmm. And Marlo is Howard University.
Yes, Marlo is also Howard University.
Now, how did that work? Do the Howard University alumni keep in touch with each other out here and try to work together and network?
We try to. We try to, and a lot of us do. A lot of us do. There's a camaraderie, definitely, when you know that the other person is from there. And I definitely try, and Marlo definitely does, especially if somebody just moves out here or we know they're trying to understand things or know, we definitely tell them and help them out. So, yes, there's definitely a nice, energy group.
You also worked a little with Avery Brooks, right?
Yes. When I was like 19 or something, I did Othello at the Shakespeare Theater at the Folger with him. Obviously, I wasn't Othello, but I'm ready to play him now, though. But yeah, I worked with him, and he was, and also Andre Brower was in it, actually. So he was Iago. So yeah, I was very blessed young to get veterans, and Avery really took me under his wing, and he talked to me and told me about the business, because I remember during that time I was complaining a lot. And he said, well, you don't like that? You don't like the things people said to you? You don't know? I said, no. He said, leave. And basically his point was, learn how to deal with it now and how to cope with it, and long and short, put it on the stage in your work.
Mm-hmm.
Not yap off stage. Put it in your work.
Now, can you also talk about your role in Leonard Manzelli's play Cages, which play I saw and like a lot, and your approach to creating that role? That was a unique role.
Sure. Yeah. First, I want to say, actually, thank you, Mel, because because of you, I met Leonard. I was working with Mel with the Cumarron Theater, and I did an acting workshop, and then that turned into Mel's great play, another great playwright is Mel, and Catch the Tiger, his piece about Marcus Garvey. So we had worked together on several things, so then Mel said, I want you to meet this guy, Leonard Manzella. And I started doing a couple readings with them, and then that turned into the actual play, and went really good. I got an Ovation nomination, which I was really excited about. The development, I played a mentally ill, five-personality inmate in prison. So, so it was pretty crazy. No pun in the character, but basically for me, I developed from different pieces of techniques and stuff I learned. But what I do, the basis that I always do is an animal. Because what the animal does is takes me out of my body. So if I think if I'm a Doberman, then I'm going to sit up this way. Or if I'm a monkey, I'm going to sit this way. Or if I'm a... So each of these personalities was a different animal. One of them was a deer. And it just immediately made me feel a certain way. So that's the basis that I start from, kind of get them in my body. Honestly, I walked around at night and found, you know, some people who were in the street kind of maybe talking to themselves a little bit. I actually start talking to them because it helped me. Because, you know, I always say there's some people you know not to mess with. And those were the ones that I kind of had conversations with, because some of the personalities had to have that. So I wanted to know what that was. I could have been hurt, but mm-hmm. thank God it was. Mm-hmm. But that's a lot of the character development I did.
And I saw it at the Stella Adler, and I saw it at the Matrix. And I thought it was just absolutely a great interpretation. Was that a big difference from moving it from the Matrix, from Stella Adler over to the Matrix?
You know what it was? For many reasons, it was a new piece, so you're uncomfortable. Because playing, the hardest part for me until opening night, well, to the reviews, honestly, was when you're playing a character like that, it's either going to be really good or it's going to be, Saturday Night Live farce. Mm-hmm. So, the whole time it was a little challenging, but in a good way, because this character, anything range of emotions you could think of, mm-hmm. I was a part of that. And so when we moved it to the Matrix, I was excited because that meant obviously something's going good. Mm-hmm. So that part was good. But when we went to the Matrix, I felt more solidified. I felt like, okay, now I can really work on the character. Because what I always tell people is I come from theater where we were doing 8 shows a week on the East Coast. So out here you do 2 to 3 maybe or 4 a week. So really the 6-week run is equivalent to your opening night. Mm-hmm. So when we moved to the Matrix, that was in my mind, now I'm ready to really open. Mm-hmm. So I was excited more than anything.
Mm-hmm. Beautiful piece. Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
Let me ask you this. What advice can you give actors about learning lines?
That's actually, I'm doing a 3-week intensive in February as an acting workshop, dealing with how do you get sides when you get an audition? What do you do? How do you break it down? And it's basically what I always tell people is you have to learn your lines. People try to memorize them. Like when you were in elementary school and it was the, little poems you do and you kind of say it over and over and over. And I always tell, basically the basis that I always tell people is know why you're saying it and ask yourself why. Like, for instance, if I'm in a scene where I'm breaking up with my girlfriend. So I have, let's say, 3 pages of dialogue. So you break it down into beats. A beat is a unit of thought. Mm-hmm. So within that scene, typically a 3-page scene, you would have, let's say, 5 beats, typically. And that's 5 units of thought. So the unit of, for instance, if I say I'm going to the store and I'm getting some candy and soda, oh, who is that over there? That's when the beat changes, when I say, who is that? Mm-hmm. So what I want to do technically in that scene, in the script, is mark when those beats change. Mm-hmm. So then within that beat, I am clear to myself why I'm saying that beat. And then you go to the next beat and you add clarity and then you give yourself a noun or a verb within each beat. So you understand, let's say, for instance, the first beat is to point out. Mm-hmm. The second beat is to accuse. So I know I'm pointing out, I know I'm accusing. So if I'm clear in my head on that, then I understand what I'm saying and it becomes about I'm learning this and I'm bringing it in my body instead mm-hmm. of over and over memorizing. Mm-hmm. That makes sense?
Mm-hmm. Okay. Is there a big difference between learning lines in film and learning lines for the stage?
Because stage, you get to play. You mm-hmm. get usually 4 to 6 weeks to play and play with the lines and everything. Film, it's like you get the sides, you get the part, and you got to do you got to mm-hmm. do it. You get on the set. You get a blocking rehearsal. This is where you go. This is what you do. And now action. So for me, and maybe because I started in theater first, it's a little more intimidating in film because it's not, you don't have time to play. Oh, we'll play mm-hmm. with it tomorrow. No. Mm-hmm. If you don't have it right, you get cut. Mm-hmm. On the cutting room floor. So.
What advice would you give actors out here trying to break into the business? Because actors come from all over the world coming out here to Los Angeles.
I tell several things. Study, understand that this is a craft and that it's not rolling dice and, oh, I hope this comes out good. That's in a role or whatever you're doing. Study and learn. Learn technique. Understand everything is based from Stanislavski. It moves up to Stella Adler, Strasberg. These are people that all of the greats we heard of study with, De Niro, Pacino, and all of them. And know what it is. Know your mm-hmm. craft. Understand what it is. And also, when people come out here, a lot of people get tricked. And if you go to an agency or management or casting call or anything, and the biggest thing I'll say, if they ask you for money, then walk away. A lot of times what happens is a lot of people come out here and they don't understand the business, so they'll go, like my cousin, for instance, he moved out here a couple years ago from New York, and he comes running in the door, oh, I ran to this agent on Hollywood Boulevard. And he told me, you know, we can do this and that, we can work with you, and then you get in the office, and all we need is $500 for pictures, because you need pictures. And so that's what I always tell people. That's what a lot of, I know people in my coaching, I private coach, and within a year, so many people, $1,000, $1,500 to this group, to that group, because they don't know any better. So if you don't want to put money out, you know.
How about the business of acting? You know, knowing your unions and all this when they come out here.
You understand that. A lot of times they'll have free seminars at Screen Actors Guild in the building, and you can go. There's a lot of wealth of information. An agent, when you get an agent, they get 10% of whatever gig you get. A manager gets 15%. The difference, and a lot of people don't get that, an agent is like a temp agency. So they'll say, hey, Jamal, you got an audition at this place, or we got an audition for you there. So it's not a whole bunch of who you'll do good and who that is. Go get it. We get our 10% and keep it moving. A manager is supposed to shape and hone your career. So I think that's why they're getting a little more. So a manager can get you some auditions, but what they're trying to do is build up your name with a couple of guest spots, co-stars, things like that, and then they'll try to use that leverage to get a good agency. So they're working with you. So I'll say know that, what you said, know the business. Know that.
How about, are there special challenges for African-Americans?
You know, when I go back and forth with that, a big part of me says no, because I have a great story of a friend who, she's African-American, and her best friend was a white girl, blonde, blue-eyed. And they both came out here at the same time, and it was my African-American friend did a lot of complaining about the roles and all of that, and cut to today, and the white girl's not working at all, and she's like top A-list actor. So I think, and I want to complain sometimes, but I look at the way people's careers go, and it's very fickle. There's no rhyme or reason. A lot of time you can be a great actor and just not get or be able to get arrested in Hollywood or on TV. I think there are issues. There's definitely issues. But as far as when you get out here, if the question is, can you work? Can you do stuff? Yes. And the obstacle is the fact that you're asking millions of people to think you're so great that you'll be headlining in a movie. And that's regardless of color. But I think when you look at the issue, what I will say about the women is I always say this. You can't name one African-American woman that can have a box office. Like, head the box office. There aren't any. Even Halle Berry tried, but it didn't work. So there's in one, you have Denzel, you have all of the, you have a lot of black men, but you can't name, unfortunately, one black woman who can head box office. So that's work that needs to be done, but, you know, things are happening.
Have we had any in the past who could do that?
Whoopi, I'm sure I'm probably forgetting somebody. I know Whoopi definitely, I'm sure I'm not thinking, but it's not many, not many, not many at all. So even the ones that were nominated or whatever. Now you have your movies that might, you know, the comedies and the things sometimes that are expected of us as African American, but I can't, honestly, I really, unless I'm forgetting somebody, I can't think of anybody who was able to do that.
What do you think about the move that Tyler Perry made by moving out of the Hollywood and his own production company down in Atlanta, I think?
You know what? I saw the interview with Oprah, and I looked, and I was like, oh, wow. It just really made me feel really good as an African-American man. Because he's one of those people that whatever you think of his work, he whether it's good or bad, he made it possible. And because of him, when I come, it'll make it easier. And he's like, if you know Oscar Michaud, who, of course, I know you know. Mel is a walking encyclopedia. This man is a wealth of knowledge. I love talking to him because he, like, he'll break it all down. But Oscar Michaud, who, what was it, in the what was it, 30s and 40s?
20s, down there with Paul Robeson.
Paul Robeson. He was basically doing what Tyler Perry's doing now. And we haven't had that since then, if I'm not mistaken, right, Mel?
That's right.
We haven't had that since, so I love what he's doing, and what I say when people do complain, and I might be one sometimes too, But I say this for all the actors. I'm like, complain all you want, but get that call and ask them to be in your movie and see if you don't be running on whatever, smoking to get on it. And I also said, when's the last time you've seen Cecily Tyson, Luke Gossett, Maya Angelou, all of the people that are working? We don't, when do you see that? So I think for us, a lot of times, because there's so few of us in those positions of power, we're so hard on them, and we expect them to represent everything. And they can't. They can't represent everything. They can only represent what they do. And I was watching him on Oprah, and he said, this is what I do. This is my experience. These are my stories. Mm-hmm. And I think instead of complaining so much, a lot of times we should maybe try to collaborate, maybe talk to him. But I think that, I don't know if that was answering your question.
Well,
I
went on the whole. And then how about, what do you think is the biggest mistake a young actor make when they first get casted in a role? They first get that script in the
hand. You mean just as an actor, how they prepare for it? Not do their homework. During their homework is reading over the script several times. Like, you read it the first time. And when you get a role, you're so excited, honestly, you're not paying attention to anything. So you read that, get through that while I'm doing something. Yay, call your family and loved ones. And then read it again. I say read it at least four times before you even go to any type of rehearsal. You're reading it for what is this story about? You're reading it for what is my character about? And that's what I mean about studying and understanding format, as you know, of course, for a script. Who's the protagonist? Who's the antagonist? Where's my arc? Where's the arc of the story? Where do I fit in into that? So you're doing all your technical homework, which for me, when you do that, it gives you the performance that you want people to see. A lot of times people will get it, and honestly, a lot of times people are overwhelmed and not sure what to do. So I call it the roll of the dice, or to say a couple prayers, say, oh, it'll work out. And it's, since this is a craft and a technique, study it and ask somebody if you don't know. That's the biggest problem. I think a lot of people, our egos or humility won't allow us to say, I don't know how to do this. And that's all right. And I think that's the big mistake a lot of people. Like, I get some of those people that'll get scripts and say, how do I do this? You know, I don't know how to prepare, and where do I begin? So ask somebody.
Okay. Just a couple more questions, and then we'll take a break for our community calendar. Okay. What is the job of an acting coach?
An acting coach's job. I had to think for a second. An acting coach's job is to guide, at least in my opinion, my definition, to guide the actor. And basically, let me say what I do as a coach. I talk to the actors, ask them what they want to work on. Some actors come to me and they need to hone their comedy skills. Some need to hone their dramatic skills. Some are stuck in a rhythm. Or they've been told I'm monotone or I'm certain. So I really do my homework and say, what do you want to work on? So I'll have them look over stuff. And from there, I'll take what they had and I'll tell them my recommendation. Well, this is what you need to work on. Because I also do vocal stuff, working with people. So my job as a coach, to me, is to guide the actor and give them the confidence to be able to basically from a certain bar, not go lower than that. To have that confidence to say, I can go all out on this, and I can be confident, and I know my work will stand at this bar and will not go any lower.
So that's okay. One more question before we go to the community calendar. You know, Nelson Mandela passed last Thursday, December the 5th, at the age of 95. He was a He had a profound effect on South Africa coming to terms with his racial problem. He was a man who symbolized forgiveness and moving forward. Can you tell us, what did Nelson Mandela mean to you when you think about Nelson?
Sure. I think the biggest thing as a kid, or teenager, when I first heard about him and my father for who he is, it was important for us to know who people were and what they meant. What I always looked at just for his life, and especially after he passed, was that stick to your convictions. You know, try, because life is hard, as we all know, but try not to sell out. whatever your convictions are, go with it. Mm-hmm. And believe. And it's so interesting, when he passed, it was like a full circle thing for here. I was like, look at South Africa and where they came from and who Mandela became. And we came here in America in shackles, and now we have a black president. Mm-hmm. So it was sad, but I smiled more than anything, because I was like, wow, he lived to see so many beautiful things. Mm-hmm. But it just made me even more so say, everything I do, I try to remember that it's for all the people that paved the path. Mm-hmm. So I have to represent them. I have to represent the people that came before me, because then what's the point? I feel like I'm spitting in their face if I don't honor them. Mm-hmm. So it just added another notch for me to hold my head up and believe.
Mm-hmm. Okay, Jamal McNeil. Let's take a break for our community calendar, and then we'll come back with our Bobby Buck section, and then we're going to open up the round table a little.
This is the community calendar. Please save this date. The Veterans Community Theater Workshop for Veterans and Non-Veterans will start on Tuesday, January 14, 2013, from 5 p.m. to 8 p.m. for a 10-week session. The sessions will consist of training stage managers, training production assistants, and stage costumes assistants. Registration fee is $25 for supplies. Also, please ask about qualifying for sponsorship. Instructors for the training will be Melvin Ishmael Johnson, teaching stage managers, Giga X, and Patrick, teaching production assistants and larva teaching, stage costumes assistants. For more information and registration or to pre-register, contact dramastage1@yahoo.com or 213-908-6587. If you have a community event that you would like announced on our show, send the info to dramastage1@yahoo.com. Attention, Earlene Anthony. Call-in number for the show is 800-893-9562. Now back to our host.
Hey, thank you, Variety. Thank you very much. We're back with our in-studio guest, actor-director Jamal McNeil. Before we get into opening up a round table to talk about I'm going to talk about the possibilities of a national African-American community theater company. But first, I want to switch it over to Bobby Buck for his regular monthly section. Bobby Buck.
Hello, hello. Thank you, Melvin. Thank you very much. Now we're getting ready for the 15 Minutes of Fame Ashton Talk with Bobby Buck. And today my guest is Ms. Pastor Carolyn and Ms. Scotty Gray. And they're here with the Hope for Life Foundation and the Power of Love Christian Fellowship. And I want to speak with them about all the positive actions that they're doing in the community. I mean, they're doing so much for the community that somebody needs to recognize all their work. So I'm going to first talk with them about, I think they have something big coming up for January called Community Day. And I've been hearing about that for a while, and I want to see who will be the first one to speak on the Community Day.
Well, hello. Happy holidays.
Happy holidays.
I'm happy to be here to talk about Community Day. Community Day started over 19 years ago. This is our 19th year celebration.
Ooh.
And we have like 24 venues that's going on that day. We're giving away new clothes. We're giving information on health awareness. We're also providing jobs, food, entertainment, something for the youth. Just a wealth of information that will be given to the community of services that's provided throughout the county of Los Angeles that otherwise people wouldn't even know about. So we're very excited about that day. We're expecting thousands of people to come out. It's a free event, and all we do is care for the people. Mm-hmm. On behalf of Bishop Edward R. Turner, who's the founder of that day, his life has been to serve the community.
Right on.
And that's basically it. I'm going to turn it over to his lovely wife, and let's hear from her.
Well, I'm glad to be here. Happy holidays to everyone out there. You know, Community Day has grown from a few hundred to several thousand, and we have been so blessed to have some of the famous in our community to come out, and those are the people who live right there in the neighborhood. We have people who don't have transportation come to be a part of Community Day. We've given away cars where all you have to do is just fill out a registration slip and put your name in the basket, and at certain points along the celebration event, we pull a name and someone is blessed with a recycled vehicle that was warmly and lovingly dedicated to Community Day. So we'd like everyone, take time out on, what's that date, Dr. Scotty?
January 18th, Saturday.
Thank you very much.
All day.
Mm-hmm. Join us. It's going to be a lot of fun.
Oh, yes. And I also heard that y'all have given away maybe over 350 cars.
Mm-hmm. Yes, we have.
Yes, a lot of giving.
Aren't we worth it?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Amen.
And I also heard y'all giving away houses, and y'all help people go to, back to school, mm-hmm. and help people get jobs. And, you know, y'all do an awful lot.
We're into pouring back into people because we've had, personally, we've come from a long way. We were homeless at one time, so we know what it's like not to have a home.
Right.
We know what it's like to have your children and you in the car, and someone blessed us, so we, in turn, will bless someone else.
I also heard of another wonderful story about a lady who walked 5 miles to Community Day, and she...
It was about that.
She won the car.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And it was her, and
She got a job that day, brand new clothes, and she was able to take her and her three children back in a vehicle.
Mm-hmm. With all the food that they could pack in.
Oh, yeah, about the food. I heard people can take so much food home that they can hibernate for like 2 or 3 months.
Oh, sure. It's free. Why not? Come on down.
Yeah, that's true. Mm-hmm. And this year we're adding a little twist to, at the same time that all these events are going on, we're having a recognition breakfast, prayer breakfast, for those icons in the community that has been supporting people and providing to the community and doing things that they otherwise wouldn't be recognized for. We're asking that people submit their names so that we can honor them on that day. And because people a lot of times give of themselves, their money, their time, unselfishly, and we are nothing but servants, and we are to take care of our brothers and our sisters. Mm-hmm. We are our brother's keepers. So in doing so, we want to honor those that went the extra mile. And show them that we love them and we appreciate them. So we ask that on this day, on Community Day, that we stop and give back.
Ooh, man, that's what I'm talking about. And I also heard that y'all having something else coming up in, was it July the 13th through the 20th, a week-long celebration of a 30-year anniversary.
That's right. We have been going strong for 30 years, coming this March 2014.
Mm-mm-mm. So. Y'all been serving well.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that's what I'm saying.
That's 30 years in ministry. Bishop Edward R. Turner and his lovely wife, Carolyn Turner. They have three beautiful girls. And they've been serving unselfishly in the community, staying in the community where they could have moved out, but they stayed in. And they just, their heart and their soul is there for the people.
And also, I heard you got something coming up for New Year's Eve.
Oh, yeah. Yes.
Watch
night service. We're praising the old year out and praising the new year in.
And of course, everyone's welcome to come to that.
Oh, yes. Mm-hmm. Good time with good food.
But what y'all get to let everybody know the address where they need to be coming to.
That address is 1430 West Manchester Boulevard, Los Angeles, 90047, between Western and Normandy.
Right on. So, what about a phone number?
That's 323-753-HOPE. Again, that's 323-753-HOPE. That's 4673 is the last acronym. And we welcome everyone to come out. We never charge. It's always a complimentary event. We always serve good food there. Tomorrow night we're having a dinner, which is December 17th. And everybody's welcome to come to see what we're going to be doing on that wonderful day. And that's when we bring about 200 or 300 people together to plan this event in January, because it takes a lot of people to do something like that. Mm-hmm. And like I said, it's about 7 or 8 different major venues going on. That's Martin Luther King's birthday weekend.
Right.
And it's that Saturday. That's Saturday. And it's all day. And everybody's welcome. And again, that number is 323-753-4673.
All right. Thank y'all very much for everything. Thanks for coming in. And y'all be ready for Community Day, January the 18th, 2014.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you.
Thank you. All right.
Okay. That's Bobby Buck. Hey, Bobby, can you tell us a little about your network? What do you do with your network? What do you try to do?
Okay, what I want to do is bring people together by using entertainment online. So what I want to do is use entertainment to bring people in to see entrepreneurship and self-employment, along with the positive actions that's going on in the community. And so what I want to do is show people how they can make money online, do something outside the box in 2014. All the online business really is like a referral program. It's a product, a service that you hear about, you tell people, and you get paid.
Mm-hmm.
So we want to do a lot of entertainment stuff, like working with nonprofits, doing talent showcases, and just a whole bunch of fundraising and things like that.
Mm-hmm. So. Now, how important is the internet to networking?
Man, it's very important. Like nowadays, people who don't have emails or don't be on social networks, they're cut off. They're not really seeing what can really be handed to them, like just by networking with somebody. Like I tell people, when you join a network, you join my network, I might not be the one that can help you, but might be somebody within my network that can help you get to the next level.
Mm-hmm.
So it's all about working with other people.
And do you recommend that they have a Facebook also?
Oh, yes. That's sometimes a Facebook is better just having a regular website because it's just a real quick way of communicating
because
everybody has one.
Mm-hmm.
So everybody just need to go ahead and pitch on in and help each other. You know, that's what I want to get with, like with the homeless and people getting out of jail, out of pen. I want to get like a create service, like profile creations, where we can help them create a profile. And that will help the, you know, like being bored, having nothing to do. That'll be something that'll stimulate their mind and they can try to, you know, learn how to get online and connect with people, you know, loved ones, or just find somebody to help them get to the next level.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Look, let's open up the round table. I want to talk a little while about the possibilities. I'm going to start off with Jamal. What do you think, what are your thoughts on the National African American Community Theater Company?
You mean the state of, that we're in today?
Yeah, the need for one, the possibility of a theater company that's linked together.
Oh, internationally.
In the United States, all the African American communities.
I think it would be really good. I know they have the Black Theater Festival in North Carolina every year, and then there's some things out here. I think it would be really important because it's a way to get to the youth and to a lot of people to spread messages, all the new playwrights, and basically because we as Black folks, we're storytellers and we're visual. And I think it would be so important for to have that much more flourishing, because I don't really feel like it out here as much as it could be or should be for the large amount of us where we take it to a whole nother level, because we could really make a lot of changes, I think, with the youth and with people.
Now, how about young people? You do acting training with young people too?
Young?
Teen?
As young as they want to bring them. I'm always a little skeptical the younger they are. I always say, who really wants this to happen? But so I work with a couple Disney kids and stuff like that. I'm a lot more cautious with the kids, so I usually sit down and kind of talk to them and make sure they're doing it for the right reason, you know? I don't want to be a part of ruining somebody's life if I don't have to be.
Now, I'd like to throw this out, especially for the church. What can we do to create more after-school programs for our young people in the community, especially areas where you're at now?
That's an excellent question. I think there should be talent within the church, because there are some churches that don't have gifts, as Brother Jamal here. So we're kind of at a loss, but then there are churches who have multi-talented individuals, and we can lean towards them. All churches can't do the same thing. So wherever he is planted, then that's where that drama ministry can flourish.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I was thinking, too, to piggyback on what she's saying. Well, a lot of churches are not open, but they should be open. Because I know, like, we have all kind of different things available to the young people and to after-school training, such as, like, getting with Bobby Buck here. We're creating a whole media network there. We have a couple buildings that are empty that we're looking to put things like this in. Drama department. We have one of our young ladies that's into acting right now currently, and she's talking about tutoring, partnering with us. And people like him, Jamal, which is an excellent resource, and that's something that draws the young people in. Mm-hmm. And then that just opened up another door for them to have another tool to increase their English or you learn their math mm-hmm. skills, because these things are all necessary. You can't be an actor or in the arts any kind of way without having those basic skills. Mm-hmm. And I think it's so necessary that we do offer those tutorials, trainings. Mm-hmm. And we do offer that at our particular facility. We do have that. Mm-hmm. And that's our passion. Bishop's passion has been to train boys. I think he's trained over like 300 of them, where he's took them in and mentored them. And he has a lot of success stories now of mm-hmm. young black men that's gone to Howard University, gone mm-hmm. to USC, different places like that. And they've been able to create themselves, reinvent themselves by marrying, having families, and doing good, and giving back to the community.
Mm-hmm. Now, what is the... because I know that used to be a fairly explosive area in terms of gangs. In that, what's happening in that area now as far as our young people is concerned?
Well, I think a lot of it has been kind of, with so many different organizations out there that's fighting against the gangs or working together with safe havens for the youth and young people, I think we've kind of put not a handle on it, because I can't say that. It's still there, but we're providing more spotlights on the people that are not in the gangs. Mm-hmm. Because we put so much attention on the gangs till we forget yes. about the ones that's not even involved in them and that is looking for somewhere to go. I remember when we had, when the graffiti first came out and we put together, Bishop Turner put together a team that would go out and paint all the graffiti. And Boys in the Hood came out and joined forces with us. And we mentored a lot of the boys like Cuba Gooding and
Morris Chestnut
and mm-hmm. Darius McQuarrie and just a whole lot of them that's mm-hmm. actors now that's out mm-hmm. there doing it. But they came down and joined with us. Mm-hmm. And we have footage and stuff of us. We've been out there fighting. I've been with Bishop and his wife for 30 years.
Mm-hmm.
This is my boss, my family, my sister. They trained me. So most of the things that I know, I owe it to them.
Like Bishop a community activist.
Yes, yes, yes.
Community organizer.
But just more with more of a servant's heart.
Mm-hmm.
So okay. we care for the people.
So, Variety, I know you're from Detroit. What's happening back there in the communities in Detroit?
They're just basically trying to rebuild and hold on.
Mm-hmm.
Those that want to remain there in Detroit, they're trying to find a solution to everything that's going on. I feel basically what happened with Detroit, the reason why I end up in the position that it's in is because there wasn't anything that was really planned out for when the dealerships closed up. And the people there that worked there and lived there, where that was just their main focus, that's all that they had with working, going to the plants. There wasn't a backup plan for them. There wasn't a partnership or a position for the employees there to buy into the corporation or some sort of like profit sharing. They didn't have that, because if they had that, they wouldn't been able to just take everything away from them. And then those people who have retired, they're not even given their full retirement. And I feel that it's very unfair that someone has worked 30 years in an automobile plant and then they can't even get their full retirement, and you cut what they made in half. And they're not even getting that. So mm-hmm. my father retired, and he had to come out of retirement and go back to work
mm-hmm.
doing something. So that was very heartbreaking for me. And
what do you think about the black leadership back there in Detroit?
I don't feel that there's no black leadership there mm-hmm. now, because, number one, it's very disappointing to me that Kwame has went to prison for 28 years. They were really hoping that he would really be able to carry the city
Now, Kwame was a little young mayor.
Yes,
the ones
a little young mayor,
the hip-hop mayor. Right.
They thought...
He got 28 years.
For extortion or embezzlement or something that he did, racketeering or something, and he just got convicted like a few months ago, and they were really dependent on him to carry the city and be more of a role model to the young people. I mean, yes, he had the attire, but the intentions did not turn out to be what they thought it was going to be, you know. And it's sad, you know, but I just felt the solution to poverty myself is that people need to start focusing on entrepreneurship. I wrote a letter back in 99 to former President Clinton. He told me to continue to lead our nation, which I will in some form of way that I can. But before he left office, he did say that this new millennium is geared toward entrepreneurship and that it's time for people to own their own. And when Obama took office, he said that you're going to be on your own. So on your own and on your own, put that together and think about what that really means.
Okay.
And there, I just wanted to also say that there are a lot of people who are saying, oh, we're unemployed, there are no jobs. For those of you who have a lot of skills, who have gone to college, who are laid off, that's a blessing to you in disguise. Because now it's time for you to take everything that you've learned from all the jobs that you've had and apply it and start your own business. Because you have the control and the position to get your own health care, pay for your own health care, choose your own health care, choose your own schedules. Everything that you want to do, there are e-businesses out there now that you can start up. There's so many things that you can do now. So entrepreneurship is the way to go. And I wanted to add real quick is that for those people who are, you all have talked about gang members and things like that, I'm starting a nonprofit organization called Keep Love, Unity, and Vision Foundation. And this foundation will be able to help ex-cons and felons who cannot find job opportunities, but to give them entrepreneurship training for the fact that once they get out of jail, they know that they cannot get a job because they're going to continue to look at as a number instead of a name and as an individual.
Okay.
So if you give them training to own their own business, then they will be able to succeed better.
Okay, thank you. Thank you, Variety. Right. Let's go around for some quick closing comments. Let me get some closing comments from Jamal.
This was a great experience. I'm glad I came here. Glad I met everybody. I'll be passing my fitness card. So thank you for having me here. And if anybody wants to contact me, it's J McNeil Studios, JMCNEIL Studios at gmail.com. And I'll be starting in February a 3-week intensive on acting, basically breaking down sides. And I'll basically keep in touch with that email, and you'll know what's going on after that. And Facebook, it's the same thing, J. McNeil Studios. Facebook, that's my page with my acting coaching and information.
Okay. Bobby, give us a closing comment.
All right, I'll do a little comedy with it. I forgot to do my my homeless tips. I say some will be serious, some will be funny, but when you're on the bus and you get somebody who don't smell too right, this is something I always do. You get one of these little cologne things right here, rub this roll in your nose before you get in. That way, you don't look obvious. You smell better. So always keep it close.
Okay. I think we got to wind down. I want to thank my guests for coming out. I would like to extend a special thank to Jamal McNeil, Bobby Buck, and his regular little Monday monthly section, which is the...
Oh, yeah, it's 15 Minutes of Fame, Ashton Talk with Bobby Buck.
Every third Monday.
Every third Monday of each month.
Please listen to past shows of the Qumran Report on iTunes, Facebook, Stitcher, and SkidRow.LA. Thank you for tuning in to the Qumran Report. And from your host, Melvin Ishmael Johnson, may the peace and blessings of the life-giving creative spirit be upon you and upon your family. I leave you with the song that opened the show, Darker Than Blue by Willis and Shantae of Positive Light Ministry.
Peace. Are we gonna be around this town? And that would makes it come true. Yeah.
politicians and Michigan reps lining their greedy pockets. Some think it's a joke that folks are living low from social injustice. Now we know that's not how it's supposed to be. So if you can get up, stand up, but there's solutions depending on you and me.
Sister.